Before he had gone much further, he came to a seep where sweet water ran from a crack and dripped down the wall of the tunnel into a natural stone basin. He drank, then went on. Even as he ran, his mind was filled with Fen. It was so many months now since he had last seen her, and he wondered how much more her appearance had altered since he had overlooked her. During the two brief contacts he had made with her earlier that day, he had sensed a sea change in her. "Of course she has changed, but not as much as I have. We will astonish each other when we next meet. She is a young woman now. What will she make of me?" He felt heady in anticipation of their meeting. He had lost all sense of the passage of time. He did not know whether it was night or day, but he went on. At last he reached a point where the tunnel descended another steep flight of steps. When he reached the bottom, he found the way forward closed off by a heavy leather curtain decorated with mystic symbols and characters. He doused the torches, then moved closer to it. A soft ray of light showed through a chink in the leather. He listened intently, his hearing immeasurably sharper and clearer than it had been before he had entered the font. Now he heard nothing. Cautiously he opened the chink in the curtain a little wider and peered through. He was looking into a small but magnificently furnished room. He searched quickly for any sign of life, but he found no aura. He opened the curtain wider and stepped through. This was Eos's boudoir. The walls and roof were covered with tiles of ivory, each carved with beautifully executed designs that had been painted with jewel-like colours. The effect was gay and enchanting. Four oil lamps were suspended from the ceiling on bronze chains. The light they threw was mellowy. Against the far wall, a silk-covered couch was piled with cushions, and a low ebony table stood at the centre of the floor. On it were set bowls of fruit, honey cakes and other sweetmeats, with a small crystal jug of red wine, its stopper in the shape of a golden dolphin. On another table lay a pile of papyrus scrolls and an astrological model of the heavens, depicting the tracks of the sun, the moon, and the planets, fashioned in fine gold. The floor was covered with multiple layers of silk carpets. He went directly to the central table and selected a bunch of grapes from a bowl. He had eaten nothing since he had left the witch's warren, and now he had the appetite of a young man. Once he had devoured half of the bowl's contents, he crossed to a second door in the wall beside the couch. It was screened by another richly decorated leather curtain, the twin to the one through which he had entered. He listened beside it, but heard nothing, then slipped through the division in the curtains into a smaller anteroom. Here a stool was set beside the far wall, in which a peephole had been drilled. Taita went to it and stooped to peer through. He found that he was looking into the Supreme Council Chamber of the Oligarchs. This was the spy-hole Eos used whenever she came down from the high mountain to preside over and direct the council's proceedings. The chamber was the one in which Taita had first met Aker, Ektang and Kator. Now it was deserted and in semi-darkness. The high window at the back framed a square of the night sky, which included part of the constellation of Centaurus. From its angle to the horizon he made a rough estimate of the time. It was past midnight, and the palace was quiet. He returned to Eos's boudoir and ate the rest of the fruit. Then he stretched out upon the couch, spun a web of concealment to protect him while he slept, closed his eyes, and was almost immediately asleep.